That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That is the Pie Man, the man who threw the pies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s with his new hit single, We Don't Want to Fight Your Fucking War. I think that it's actually called Fucking War. This is the second part of Roy Bourgeois, the man with the School of America's watch. This is the second part where he fields questions. And if you're looking for that song, and I know you are right now, you just look at pieman.org or .com or .biz or .tv. But the Pie Man is out there with this wonderful song that Blast Furnace Radio hopes to play again and again and again until this war is over. Now, Roy Bourgeois.
There's been a resolution out there for a few years now that has been introduced by two of our bishops. Actually, there are 10 bishops who came together and put together a resolution. A lot of the initiative coming from Bishop Tom Gummelton and Bishop Kendrick Williams from Lexington, Kentucky. And while the president of the U.S. Bishops Conference is signed on, and some of our cardinals, Cardinal George out in Chicago, and a little over half of our bishops, 325 bishops, are on board. There are others who have not signed on. I don't know their personal reasons for that. Some are saying that they're still studying the issue. Their voices, I think, would really help. Some of the bishops haven't given it that much attention. Letters to them, I'm happy to say that our bishop here is on board. He should be thanked. And we appreciate, you know, his being on board. I've talked with different bishops about that. Some have come on board. Others said they're still thinking about it. Some of our spiritual leaders, I have to say this, have become cheerleaders for the military. At this time especially, we see how many of our spiritual leaders are being used to support what's going on in Afghanistan and the bombing, the violence. Some of our theologians have been asked to give their opinions about just war, the just war theory. And of course, they always justify it, which they have. These prerequisites are met. But let me say this. While as disappointing as it is to have some of our bishops, some not on board, and spiritual leaders of other faith communities among the Methodists, a few haven't signed on, and other church bodies, I want to say this, that this movement is a grassroots movement. It's from the top. It will happen from the bottom up. And I learned this in Latin America. These movements for peace and for justice and solidarity with the suffering poor of our world, change really will come from the bottom up, not from the top down. We need the voices, of course, of those who've got a strong voice. But really, in a sense, the witness is coming from the grassroots people. And we're going to keep our hands on the plow. We're not waiting for any spiritual leader who is not yet on board. We hope they catch up with us. But if they don't, that's okay too. Some have asked that they step down. I know a few friends, and I have written to a couple. If you don't have the courage to speak out on these issues that are so, first, that is a moral issue. It's about suffering, about death, about the poor, about violence. More than ever, spiritual leaders should be addressing this. And perhaps if it's the issue of courage, not having the courage to speak out, could you maybe have the courage to step down and turn over that office to someone who will be able to speak? But again, we're moving ahead with hope, with joy. Thanks.
Well, Could you maybe address maybe some of the doubters? I mean, how do you know some of the stuff is still going on inside? I wonder if you might mention something about Major Joseph Blair.
Yes, about this is an important question about today. Oh, let's update this some too. You know, the movement has really grown. It's gotten so big, put so much pressure on Congress from votes. It was 2 years ago that we had enough votes. We won in the House of Representatives by 32 votes to cut off the funding. But we lost in the conference committee in the Senate by one. The Pentagon realized it couldn't sustain another vote. So this last year, there was another vote to change the name. And we lost by 10 votes here. It was 204 to 210 to change the name. On so January the 17th of this year, the School of the Americas was changed from the School of the Americas to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. I just want to say that no one has been fooled here. It's still about men with guns. We look at the curriculum, it's basically the same. It's like taking a bottle of poison and writing penicillin on it. It's still deadly. I met about 2 months ago with the new commandant of the school, and we discussed the curriculum. And I really asked what I really was very interested in about the combat courses, which for us is a very, 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 the basics of the issue, the very core and essence of what this is for us. We look at the curriculum and we see all these courses that we feel don't lead to peace and our democracy or healing. And I wanted to know if they're going to get rid of those courses. And he said, no, they cannot. And I said, well, when you do, let us know. They do say that they are now teaching democracy at the school. But the curriculum, of course, does not reflect that with all of these combat courses. We ask, how do you teach democracy through the barrel of a gun? How do you teach democracy, we feel, at an undemocratic institution? We say, let's close that school there with these combat courses. Let's send them to some of our fine U.S. universities. Bring some here to this fine university. Not the whole gang, maybe five. I've been to a number of Jesuit colleges, actually, and they're thinking of maybe giving a couple of scholarships. We can close it that way, you know. One university will take three, four, five, another take two or three. And you bring them here, unarmed, of course. And what we're going to do, we're going to give some skills that are going to help their people. We're going to teach them courses, you know, where they can learn, again, skills here at this university that will enable them to go back to their home country and really help improve the quality of life for their people. Is this being unreasonable? We don't think so. We think it's a reasonable request in light of the role they have played in their countries back then and today. There are some civilian presidents now in El Salvador, Guatemala, where the dictators used to rule, and Bolivia, Colombia. But the real power today is still in the hands of those militaries there. And the School of the Americas really helps to keep them in power, entrenched. And closing this school, I just want to say it would send a wonderful message to the poor of Latin America. It's a symbol of the Cold War. As Major Joseph Blair, about Major Blair, 20 years in the Army and instructed at the school, out of nowhere, I wake up one morning there in Columbus, Georgia, I'm reading the local paper, Columbus Ledger, big paper, the only paper in town. There's an op-ed piece from this Major Joseph Blair, retired, former instructor at the School of the Americas, calling for its closure. Couldn't believe it. We've become very good friends. Major Blair is now a spokesperson, in a sense, you know, as a former instructor for the movement. We've made a video on his testimony called an insider speaks out. He's our first and only insider that's come forward. And I've asked him, as we've become friends, what really was behind your breaking your silence? Why did you come forward? And he said, well, there was that Jesuit connection. He was a graduate of Marquette University in Milwaukee. And then some of the soldiers who were involved in the massacre of the 6 Jesuits and the 2 women were his students. And that just, and also the reception that Representative Moakley got when he was in El Salvador investigating. They tried to put every obstacle in its way. They did not cooperate. They hid a lot of information, kept a lot of information from the task force. And so Jill is now on board, committed to our struggle, and it's good to have him with us. Please.
Thanks, Father, for being here. And I especially enjoy your perspective, not only as a priest, but also as a serviceman. And you might be familiar with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman's book on killing, where he talks about actual scientific studies done by the military that really point to the understanding that it is really not within human nature for a person to kill someone else. A few days after the September 11th bombing, a few people in this room and I were at the Paul Patchen Conference in Philadelphia. And during one of the lunch breaks, there were several hundred of us that stood out on the front lawn, strategically pointed between the ABC News studio and the NBC News studio across the street, holding banners, praying, and singing, really calling for peace. I would say that in the hour that we were out there, hundreds of cars drove by, people certainly seeing our signs, giving us the thumbs up as we were giving them back, and beeping their horns. Yet at the same time, I was watching on the news this continual statistic that the majority of people in the United States are supporting the president's notion of retaliation, of going back, and of this new type of war, the first war of this new century. I wonder if maybe you could speak to the idea as a serviceman, someone who has gone through that, your perspective of, do you really think that we ought to be promoting the idea of, if you love your country, therefore you must agree with what is being done? And how, maybe if you could speak a little bit more of how you came to an understanding that really war is not the way, violence isn't the way, even though peace often is in many respects more burdensome regarding resources and time, that peace is really the way. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you. Let me try and be brief here, address what you're saying. First, I want to say it hurts. It hurts to see how we're caught up in patriotism and how a lot of the patriotism is connected to flags, those symbols. I came to this when I was in Vietnam. It took me 3 years to come back, when I came back from Vietnam, to work through some things before I went on my first demonstration. And I was called unpatriotic, I remember, in front of the White House with a group of veterans. And it made me think seriously about that word, patriotism. And what I've come to personally, it doesn't disturb me now in a sense. I feel patriotism is love of country. But we can't love a country in the abstract. We can't love a flag. How do you love an object? You express patriotism by love of people who inhabit that country. And if you love people, you don't want them to get hurt, put them in harm's way. You don't want them to suffer. You don't want to send them off to a war where there will be death, killing, suffering, and their families here suffering. No, if you love your country, you will look for a way out. Where there won't be all of this needless suffering and death. And that's where I am on that. And something else, just a reflection about all this. I mean, I see these signs, a lot of signs, God bless America. And it hurts. Because we have become, we have made God so little. Rather than God creating us, we create God in our image. God bless America. I think God is big enough to bless the world, to bless Afghanistan. And I saw this political cartoon there. Just ran in the local paper, actually. I was quite surprised to see that. But a lot of people in front of the mall, this couple in the mall, and all these flags and all the stores. And one said, "God bless America and our October mattress sale." How a lot of the flags are connected to business. It's just been my experience lastly about maybe this issue of the violence. Something else, too, that I think about, the poll that you mentioned, about 90% of the people want to go off to war, want support the president's war efforts. I think there should be another question in there that's going to actually bring that down some. Are you willing to go there to give your life for this? And a lot of those guys participating in this poll saying, "Let's go," they're going to watch it on CNN. It's going to be the youth of our country who are there now and who will go later. They say this is going to be a prolonged war. Already I'm starting to see cracks in all of this, some rumbling. And this is what happened in Vietnam. At first, I didn't get it. I was so blinded by my patriotism, that blind patriotism that I was weaned on. I had to work through a lot of stuff. The Buddhists say this, our greatest enemy is ignorance. And I see this so often. I saw this when I was in the military, when I went to Vietnam. I didn't understand the protesting of all these college students that were going on as I was going off to war. I didn't understand that. And then later I did. And then in Vietnam, I remember some of the politicians visiting us in the field, patting us on the back and saying, "Good going, we're proud of you, we're behind you." And the next day they're on a plane back to Washington. And I'm saying, "Wait a minute, what do you mean you're with us? You're with us for a day, maybe a couple of hours." And again, what's going to happen here, it's the youth of our country, the best of our country. It's the students, the college students, some right out of high school, who that we are being that preparing now for war. And there's got to be another way. There's got to be another way. And I firmly believe that we didn't do anything, really make a serious effort in trying to communicate using some diplomacy, international courts. From day one, sure, we were caught up in so much grieving and suffering and anger. Our country was humiliated for the first time so long. It hit home. And we're the most powerful country in the world, the most powerful. But yet, with all of our weapons, we have never, ever felt less secure. What does this say to us? But I saw a couple days ago, front page of the New York Times, we are now giving this big defense contract to Lockheed $200 billion from our taxes to build us a new fighter plane. Our new idol. We really believe that this is going to protect us. This is going to give us hope. It's a dead-end street. It's another one of those idols that we are putting our trust in. It has never worked, and it won't work now. And all I can say is, way back in those days of Vietnam as a young man, something, grace of God, that missionary, the reality of the violence, something just started to click. I began to realize it was a dead-end street. It was a dead-end street. And today I see it as a dead-end street. And we simply have to learn how to somehow come together, understand, ask that very threatening question, Why are they upset, so upset with us? Can we address that? And I just want to say, though, as I travel around to a lot of colleges, I see a lot of hope. Forums taking place, teach-ins, drawing on the experience of students from other lands, other countries there at the universities, to help students, help us understand here how our foreign policy is perceived there. And I think, lastly, this is a very, very teachable moment. And we're going to see more people, I feel, coming on board, going on the streets as you did there and at the Call to Action Conference, and being in the arena, letting our voices be heard. Now, we're going to take some hits. We're going to take some hits. This is a very, very challenging time because we're in the midst of a lot of patriotism here. And so often what we say and do now will be interpreted as unpatriotic, un-American, and anti-war. You bet I'm anti-war. Oh, please.
Well, it seems like they're just fading away. Just fading there with Roy Bourgeois at the West Virginia Jesuit College. This is Vincent Irene for Blast Furnace Radio.